is the West helping the democracy in Ukraine or is destroying the democracy in Ukraine? At the same time, we're witnessing that there are a lot of weapons on the part of Russians. They're moving these weapons to the northern part of Ukraine at the border of Sumy region. And how do you see these activities on the part of Russia?
I think we have only very poor understanding of what's going on in Ukraine, by the way. First of all, what of course we are hearing every day about the advance of the Russian forces in the area of Kharkov, Avdiivka, and so on. And no question, the Russians are advancing. But we have to understand that the purpose and the, let's say, the objective of the Russians is not to take territory, is to destroy the military potential of Ukraine. That's the objective. They don't, if they can take territory by destroying forces, they will do that. But the main purpose is not to take territory, is to destroy forces. So the more forces you bring on the battlefield, the better for the Russians, because that's the objective. That's the that's what the Westerners have not understood at all. By pushing the Ukrainian to fight, they are just feeding the objectives, the fulfillment of the objectives for the Russians. That's all. So, but that's the tip of the iceberg, if you want, because I mentioned also in my book of The Art of War of Russia, this something that nobody talks about, but there is and a very, I mean,
please
strong...
show your book while you're talking about your book to our audience.
Sorry, yeah. That's this one, The Russian Art of War. And in that book, I explain the way the Russians fight the war in Ukraine. But so there is one thing, I mean, one aspect is, of course, what is done by the Russian forces and command and the general staff and all that, all these people we know, Gerasimov and blah, 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 all these guys. But there is an aspect that we totally ignore, we don't want to see, because that would contradict the narrative that we have. It's that there is a very strong resistance within Ukraine, a pro-Russian resistance within Ukraine, which is probably supported by some Spetsnaz, or the Spetsnaz is the... these are the Russian special forces, and probably there are special forces involved in that to organize resistance networks within Ukraine. And these resistance networks do a lot of job in destroying the logistics, destroying ammunition depots, destroying power plants, destroying or derailing trains, anything like this. As the French resistance did during World War II, or as did the Soviet partisans in the rear of the German forces in World War II. Exactly the same thing. And that happens in Ukrainian territory. The problem of that situation is that it created a chaos within the Ukraine, and that led to also different actors let's say, start their own war within Ukraine, including the special service, the SBU, which is the counterpart of the FSB in Russia. The FSB is a security service. It's a service which is responsible for domestic security. It includes armored units. It's cannot be compared to the FBI in the United States. The FBI is a police that is not really able to enforce. But FSB has even units, military units, if you want. And that's the same for SBU. You have special units, special forces that are able to conduct covert activities in Ukraine and outside Ukraine. You probably heard about a lot of oligarchs that have been killed in Spain, in Europe, even in Russia, by the way. And this was done by the agents of the SBU. So it's a very powerful organization. But the problem is that this very powerful organization tends to have a kind of a parallel command structure within the Ukrainian state. And that's why you have periodically, you had that at the beginning of 2023. And you had that also in summer 2023 in Ukraine. And now you have also some purges that are done by the Ukrainian government against these SBU forces because they become like a state within the state. So that means that the Ukraine is no longer the Ukraine we tend to portray in the West with a nice government and things that we see in Western countries with a kind of a stable political structure and all that. You have several parallel structures that act maybe not even to the knowledge of the political command, and I mean Zelensky, for instance. So I don't know exactly, because obviously I'm not involved or informed about the details of the inquiry about, not the inquiry, the work of the commission that is making this inquiry about the caucus incident, the bombing attack. Excuse me. So I don't know the details, but we know that, I mean, apparently, according to the Russians, the Ukraine is involved. I mean, the Ukrainians involved in that attack. The problem is probably to define who in the state structure is responsible for that, who decided of the operation, with the help of whom. And remember that the Russian government made and informed the government of UK and France that they have an inquiry against the covert activities of those two countries within, and the US also within Russia. So there may be others, Poland, I don't know, I have no idea. But it may be that this Crocus operation was masterminded by somebody in Ukraine or even outside Ukraine with the help of Ukrainians. But there is a clear involvement of Ukraine, but maybe not Zelensky himself. And that shows the complexity of what is going on today in Ukraine. And that explains also why the Russians consider that Zelensky is not necessarily legitimate. For instance, if we talk about negotiations and things like this, Vladimir Putin just said in a press conference, I think in Belarus, he questions the legitimacy of Zelensky because we don't know exactly who is ruling Ukraine, in fact. There are probably other parallel forces that are acting within Ukraine. And this is not completely new, because you may remember that in 2019, as Zelensky was elected in April 2019, he was elected with the program of making peace with Russia. But in May 2019, Dmitry Yarosh, who at the time was the leader of the extreme right-wing, ultra-right-wing a party, the Pravi sector. This is the right sector in Ukrainian. And this guy said in the media, officially, openly, he said, if Zelensky applies his program, we'll kill him. So meaning that already at the very beginning, as soon as Zelensky took power, he had already forces, parallel forces, that made every effort so that he would not make his program of making peace with Russia. Today, Dmitry Yarosh is the head of the Ukrainian Volunteer Army, which is an army that operates in Ukraine, but it's an army which is not subordinated to the Ministry of Defense. It's totally independent from the Ministry of Defense, totally independent from the Ministry of Interior. It's not in the National Guard or something like that. It's a totally independent army that operates within within Ukraine, and according to some reports, this in particular an army that kills all those who want to desert, for instance, all those who want to defect to the Russians. These guys are behind them and kill them. So, you know, we are talking about something much more complex, and probably as this conflict ends, and I hope it will end, but I don't know when, but if it ends, probably we will start to know what happened during these months or years of the war. And probably the picture that will emerge, a picture of Ukraine, will probably not be the most, let's say, clear and clean image that we might, or some might expect. Probably we will see an obscure side of the Ukrainian leadership at large, not necessarily Zelensky himself, but his entourage and the way the country was led to the war. So I think we are witnessing something which is quite odd. And to some extent, a situation which is not very different from what we discussed about Israel, because more and more you have Ukrainian soldiers, they are not willing to go fighting. The number of people who defect or surrender is just enormous, because people don't want to fight, period. And this is a situation, this is exactly the same situation that we are witnessing in Gaza. So and interestingly, we see on both sides, the West is supporting the side that doesn't want to fight. That's some question to that's something to think about. But on both cases, we're supporting the side that doesn't want to fight. That's why you have this forced recruitment and all that, and you know, all these images of the countryside, especially. You have streets in the villages or the small towns that are totally empty because everybody hides, doesn't want to be recruited. And that's not new. I mean, we had reports of this already last year, in fact. So we are seeing something, to some extent, it's tragic for these countries, because we know, they know that they are fighting the right war. The wrong war, sorry. They are fighting the wrong war. And they should have stopped this war as the Russians were ready to discuss and to negotiate in March 2022. But the West didn't want this. They forced the Ukrainians to continue fighting against the Russians. And now we are, and what I said, I think already said that on your channel. I think the only result of that Western strategy, if you want, is that it will lead to the Ukrainian destruction. Because, you know, if you put the shoes of the Russians, you put yourself in the Russian mind, they are fighting an enemy this enemy is willing to stop, but the West is feeding this combatant with weapons, forcing them to fight and so on. So you know that nobody wants to negotiate, and the upcoming peace so-called peace conference in Switzerland is just an additional proof that nobody wants to talk to the Russians. They don't want a solution. They want a Russian capitulation, which is just absurd. So if you put yourself in the mind of a Russian, they say, well, the only way to solve the conflict is to remove Ukraine. Because if you keep, as long as Ukraine exists, the West will provide weapons and make this Ukraine fighting against us. So if we want to stop the war, we have to stop the mere existence of that country. You know, that's the logical consequence of the way the West is pressing Ukraine to fight. And this is just incredible that the West has not understood that there is a point that where you have to understand that you are not able to defeat Russia. And I don't know if it was on this channel, but in any case, you know, a couple of days ago, Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, was audited by the Armed Force Committee of the Senate. And one of the senators asked Lloyd Austin, how do you find victory? For Ukraine, I mean. How do you find victory? And he was not able to answer that question. Because himself, as Secretary of Defense, and involved in the support to Ukraine and the advisory, all this advice that was provided to you, they are not able to define what victory could be for Ukraine. So if you don't know how you figure out a victory or even an objective for Ukraine, how can you win? There's no way you can win. This is an admission that you are failing, not being able to define victory. He didn't even try to define an absurd objective. He was not able to define one objective. So this guy has already lost. This guy has already lost, and that's exactly what's happening. So we are pressing Ukraine in a fight that nobody knows how it will end. Meaning that from the Russian side, the logical conclusion based on that is that we have to make Ukraine disappear. It doesn't mean that Ukraine must be totally destroyed, but it means that Ukraine must no longer be a functional state or something that is different from what we understand under a state as it was with Ukraine. So that's the risk of pushing a country into a conflict without having any objective. And I fear that we are in that kind of dynamics, which is, in my view, totally absurd. And only the Ukrainians will pay the price for this.
Yeah.
History will judge.
We talk about the summit in Switzerland in June. We know that Lula, the president of Brazil, said he's not going to be there, and the head of South Africa as well. And it seems that China is not going to send anybody there. Even Biden, he said, Bloomberg reported that Biden is not going to participate. What they're doing in Switzerland, what is that all about? PR? If they want to provide Ukraine with more support from other countries, even in that direction is not working for them.
Well, We have to understand that the peace plan or the peace formula, as it was named, the Zelensky peace formula, that's the name of the plan. That's a plan that was designed at the end of 2022. And in July 2022, if you remember, Zelensky and General Zaluzhny, who was at the time the head of the chief of the Ukrainian armed forces, promised to have an offensive that would lead to the total victory, and they promised that they would have a 1 million army to fight the Russians, and that in 2023 they would reconquer Crimea and all that. And this idea was started in July 2022. And in September 2022, at the UN General Assembly, the Zelensky proposed a plan, a peace plan. But in fact, this peace plan, it was at the time it had 5 points. This peace plan was in fact a capitulation plan for Russia, because it was based on this idea that the Ukrainian, the 1 million army, would defeat the Russians, and that thing would be solved. And this they promised a first offensive in autumn, fall 2022. This didn't happen. They lacked ammunition, and then they asked for the Americans to have new tanks and all that, because in fact they had no ammunition, no tanks, no hardware anymore. And that led to the offensive of 2023. And at the end of 2023, and from June, as soon as this counteroffensive started in effect in early June 2023, from that point on, Zelensky resurrected his plan, but then he decomposed the 5 points into a 10 points plan, which is, again, in substance, a capitulation plan for Russia. And that was based on the assumption that the Ukrainian offensive or counteroffensive would be successful, and they would be able to repel the Russian forces to the 1991 borders. And the plan was presented on several occasions. It was presented in June 2023 in Copenhagen. Then it was presented in a so-called peace conference in August 2023 in Jeddah, in Saudi Arabia. Then it was presented again in October 23 in Malta. And then again in January 2024 in Davos, just before the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. And each time it was based on the assumption that, on each occasion, the Russians were never invited, because, of course, it was a plan for the Russian capitulation. No, it's not a peace plan, it's a capitulation plan. Now, in early this year, as I said, the 10-point plan was presented just before the Davos meeting for the World Economic Forum, and it didn't have much success, because only the countries interested by the World Economic Forum attended this conference, about 30 countries. I may be wrong, but I think it was around 30 countries attended this so-called peace conference. And then Zelensky asked the Swiss Minister of Foreign Affairs to organize another conference, but a larger conference, involving not just the attendees of the World Economic Forum, but the whole international community. So the Swiss Ministry of Foreign Affairs took on its shoulder the organization of this conference. The Swiss invited 160 nations to attend this conference. Of course, they didn't invite the Russians again. So it's a peace conference without one party to the war, which is quite strange. I don't understand how the Swiss played this game. But anyway, that's the way it is. They invited 160 countries. At this stage, by the 15th of May, I don't know today, but as of the 15th of May, only 50 countries had responded and confirmed their presence to that conference. So that's roughly the number of countries that recognize the state of Israel, that don't recognize the state of Israel, if I can relate with what we discussed before. So again, you have roughly the NATO countries plus some other countries such as Australia, and you have all the same partners in crime, if you want. This is the same club. If it remains at 50 confirmed participants. So, and as you said, China doesn't want to. And by the way, there will be a BRICS summit at the same time. So a lot of countries, especially in the so-called Global South, they will probably prefer to be at the BRICS conference than to be present in a peace conference that leads nowhere, because this conference is in fact doomed to fail. And in fact, what happens is that the Americans have understood that this conference will probably fail. And it's interesting. I don't know if this will be what will happen in effect, but I can show you here the 10 points of the Zelensky's formula, peace formula. I don't want to discuss each of these points, but interestingly enough, what is apparently planned to be addressed in Bürgenstock in Switzerland in June is in fact only a portion of this point. Only 3 points will be discussed, and namely the radiation and nuclear safety, the food security and the free circulation of food and Black Sea and things like this, and the release of prisoner and deported persons and things like that. Because, and these are obviously the only points where you might have an agreement with the Russians, and the rest are dropped, apparently. I don't know if it is actually what will happen, but apparently this is the situation as or the plan as it will be discussed in June. So we see that the West understands that this conference, this hugely advertised conference and all that, is doomed to fail, and they are trying to find an escape route or escape ramp for this conference. So it's interesting because that underlines the lack of vision, the lack of strategy, the lack of understanding of the whereabouts of this conflict. The Western leadership at large, not just the Americans, but that's also that applies to the Europeans and to the Swiss in that particular case. They are managing by wishful thinking. You know, this is totally disconnected from any reality, and this is quite strange that we see that behavior since the beginning. I mean, even before the beginning of this Russian military operation, but specifically and especially since February 2022, we are seeing this kind of behavior totally disconnected from reality. And again, that relates very much to the Israeli behavior in Gaza. It's totally disconnected from reality. And we see that the way the West is addressing the Ukraine crisis is not only wrong, but it's backfiring against Europe itself, economically and so on and so forth. As a result, we can seriously doubt the intellectual capacity and capability of our leaders. I mean, sincerely, they seems to have the IQ of a shoebox. This is just incredible, and the inability to anticipate problems, to understand or trying to understand how will the Russians or whoever behave. Zelensky, after having rebuffed the Chinese and all that, now he's asking the help of the Chinese because he hopes that the Chinese will have an influence over the Russians. And again, this is also wishful thinking. How come the West can have this idea that the Chinese can influence the Russians? We have seen that Janet Yellen, Antony Blinken, Emmanuel Macron tried to tell Xi Jinping that he should influence Putin on the way he conducts the war. And each time the Chinese have said, that's not our business. How come do the Western leadership come again and again with the same requests? They know it will not work. So it's just wishful thinking. It's totally disconnected from any reality. And that's exactly what is illustrated or even exemplified by this conference in Birkenstock in June. But incidentally, it's also interesting that, I think it was today or yesterday, the Swiss Minister of Defense, this is Mrs. Viola Amert, she's the Minister of Defense, now she proposing a new peace conference, another peace conference, involving then the Russians. So, you know, how come didn't they come to this idea before? And using the opportunity of this conference in Birkenstock, which is announced in mid-June, why didn't they anticipated the issue of Russia and invite Russia after that? You know, when you see this kind of thing, you understand the way Vladimir Putin answers. And that was during the interview he had with Tucker Carlson, by the way, and also in the last press conference he gave in Belarus. That Putin said, well, but, you know, even if we decide something, how are we sure that anybody will come afterwards to change everything and throw overboard the agreement we had? Because this is so erratic, this is so irrational, this is so a day-to-day management, that if you're Russians, how can you have to hold the Western leadership as credible? They have absolutely no credibility whatsoever. So you understand that, in fact, and that comes again to a conclusion I made in other program we had together. But the reality is that if you look at the pattern of the leadership in the world today, we see that the most rational leadership is in what we call the rest of the world. The Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, African countries and all, these are the most rational decision makers. We saw that, we discussed that with the reaction, the Iranian reaction to the Israeli attack in Damascus. We saw that the reaction was well thought. They didn't went into kind of hip shooting exercise. They waited. They took contact with the Americans and all that, you know, to make sure that their reaction will not trigger a World War III. So it was very well measured. It was very well calculated. It was, and even the reaction itself was so well calculated that it didn't cost a single human life. So we see that we have in the rest of the world, we have a so rational, so intelligent kind of leadership. We may agree or not with the political system in Iran, in China, in Russia, or elsewhere in the world. I'm not discussing that. But what we can certainly say is that regardless of the political system, the leaders are extremely rational. They are not irrational. They are not trigger-happy people. They are doing things after a profound and thorough calculation. And when they're obliged to act, as it was the case for Russia in February 2022, as it was the case in Iran after the 1st of April attack, the Israeli attack, or as it is today in the Taiwan issue for China, we see that we push those countries to act. They are wise enough not to overreact and to act in a very measured way, showing that they are perfectly able to weigh the consequences of what they do, and they do things knowing exactly what they are doing. On the other hand, on the Western side, I'm not sure that everybody understands the consequence of what they are doing. They do things without knowing what will happen. And that, by the way, begs another question, because, as you know, I come from the strategic intelligence, which is basically the intelligence that advises the government on the situation. But that, what we are witnessing today in the West, to me, as a intelligence professional, indicates that the role of strategic intelligence is just nil. People act without any rational advice. This is just hip shooting. That's it. This is hip shooting. So that concerns me, because we see that, and of course you have all these declarations of about possible the use of weapons against Russian territory and all this kind of discussion that we will probably not discuss right now, but that indicates that these guys are just in a dynamics of getting towards war without understanding the consequence of what they are doing. Fortunately, the Russians are wise enough to warn these people and saying, be careful, because what you just said may have consequences. And by the way, you can see that after the declaration of David Cameron and Emmanuel Macron about the use of weapons against Russian territory and the use of French troops in Ukraine, and when the ambassadors of the two countries were called in Moscow, already summoned, in fact, by the foreign ministry. After that, the two countries backed off a little bit. They said, well, no, that's not what we wanted to say. Meaning that what they say in a first place was in fact not thoroughly thought. That was, again, hip shooting. And after the Russians made them aware of the consequences, then they had to back off a little bit and say, well, no, that's not exactly what. And that illustrates perfectly the nature of the leadership and the nature of the decision making in the West. And I think that's very worrying. That's what worries me, because I in my professional life I was very close to decision making in various capacities, but I was very close to the political decision making in international organization in my country and so on. And today what I'm seeing is that the decision making is totally erratic. And that should be the biggest matter of concern for the analysts and commentators and all that. So that's my personal, let's say, very broad understanding of the issues you just mentioned.